Yes, it's Pet Chat time, and I'm joined by Cheryl Shaw and Dr. David Tabrett in the 2NURFM studio. Hello.
Hey, Amanda.
I'm looking at Cheryl's pin, and this week we're talking about the same thing as we were supposed to be talking about last week.
Yeah, we had so many calls last week we didn't get to it, so today I'm going to be talking about winter nose or snow nose.
Oh, it's been cold.
It has.
Goodness.
Has your nose changed colour?
Yes. That might be the other end of the day.
Oh, this is Pet Chat. Now, we're talking about winter nose today. Is it winter nose or snow nose,
yep,
Cheryl?
It's known as both. So snow nose, winter nose, or in David's case, it'd be hypopigmentation nose. So what we're talking about is what happens to some dogs. Now, it doesn't happen to all dogs, but some dogs actually have a change in their colour of their nose during the colder weather. I have one dog every year it happens to. So he goes from a dark black nose to a liver-coloured nose. Now, this change is only temporary. So once the weather warms up, things will change again. So it's not an illness and it's not a disease. It's not contagious, it's not painful, and it's not itchy. But one of the things, it doesn't interfere with their breathing or their sense of smell. It's just a colour change. So that pigment alters. Now, it happens to some dogs more than other dogs, particularly to dogs that have been bred in the Northern Hemisphere. So dogs like your Labradors, your Siberian Huskies, your Samoyeds, Weimaraners, dogs like that often have more reaction to the colder weather. And again, it goes down to genetics. One of the things with these dogs like a Labrador, they have a dilution in their genes. So what happens with their noses are usually black, and if they have a dilution in their colour, so that the Labrador is yellow or a golden colour, that will often be the dog that is more prone to getting the colour or the change in the dog's nose. Now, one of the things that we do know that it is only temporary, so that colour will come back. It's not going to be an issue for the dog. And how you notice it, sometimes you think, oh, what's wrong with my dog's nose? It's a different colour. It doesn't change the surface of the nose, so the texture stays the same. It's just the colour that is altered. And there's a few things that cause it. The first thing is that we call it winter nose because in the wintertime, that we don't get as many ultraviolet rays as we do in the summertime. And those ultraviolet rays are what helps to change the melatonin levels in the dog's skin. So if we have reduced UV light, those melatonin don't have the opportunity to change the colour of the cells in the skin. The other thing is that genetics, so how a dog is bred, so there's sometimes genes play a really big part in if the genes go from both parents, they inherit genes from both parents. It's called a polygenic trait. It will mean that they're more prone to getting the snow nose. And hormones also play a chance of changing the colour of the nose. So if a dog is pregnant or it's got going through puberty or thyroid imbalances, again, this will change the colour of the nose. And it really happens more at this time of the year because of that reduction in the UV lights. And so we don't have to worry about it. It's not something that's going to be permanent. It's not going to affect the health of the dog at all. It's just this prolonged cloudy weather that we've had. It's making a lot more dogs have a snow nose. And sometimes it can be just a change in colour. You might even notice it's in some dogs down the philtrum, the middle of the dog's nose, they'll have a band of pink just down the centre. Sometimes it can be blotchy or, you know, patches. Sometimes it'll only affect one side of the nose, sometimes both. It just depends on the dog. But any dog that's spending more time inside and not being exposed to, you know, the sunlight is going to be more prone to having it, so that melatonin just isn't being produced. And there's tyrosine also is reduced, which is the enzyme that helps make the melatonin, and it is affected by cold weather. So when we have colder weather, it tends to die off. And also with aging cells, that tyrosol, it also...
Tyrosinase.
Tyrosinase, yeah. That's how
you say it. Tyrosine is the amino acid.
Yep.
Involved in melatonin production.
Yes.
And so the enzyme tyrosinase is sensitive, as you said, to the cold.
And age.
And age.
Yeah. So sometimes the snow nose might not necessarily be a snow nose in an older dog. It can be the reduction of the coloration or the pigmentation in the dog's nose, because as the cells age, it doesn't produce as much. It dies off.
It also means that you might see that in warmer climates, warmer environments, warmer seasons because of that age factor.
So if you do notice anything else on your dog, if you do notice a crusty nose or scaly, or, you know, if there's bleeding or anything, definitely go to the vet. Don't just think,
that's something different.
Yeah, it's something completely different. So, you know, just because we've got some coloration, we still need to look at our dog's noses and what's going on.
That's good advice. Now, Rodney's called. He's from Charlestown, and he's got looking for some advice. He's got an 11-month-old Jack Russell who wants to play all the time, and what's a good partner dog? Hi, Rodney.
Good afternoon. How are we?
Good, good. Rodney, you're 11-month-old. They want to play all the time. How rude. Jack Russell.
I've just come back out of I had open-heart surgery.
Oh, yeah. Great.
I'll come home and look, he is a beautiful dog.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of that I think he needs a partner. He has been de-sexed.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that might slow him down maybe 1%, but it seems to have increased him. He's a very loving dog, very loyal, but he needs somebody else to play with him. What I'm trying to figure out is what do I get him other than he's got 1,000 toys, which he's destroyed, as Jack Russell.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out what I could, you know, maybe get another rescue dog or whatever, and just calm him down even further. Because if people come in the door and he's nip, 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 I know that's his way of saying, hello, you look at me first before you go anywhere else. And it's just a matter of, I'm just trying to figure out how I can get him to go back to being a normal dog.
I hear what you're going through for sure, and I've had this similar experience. Now, unfortunately, he is being a normal dog.
Okay.
And before we kind of rush out and think we're going to fix this by having another dog to distract him, I think you could end up with double trouble. So let's just step it back a bit. First of all, he's 11 month old.
Yes,
he's basically a teenager. He's got teenager energy levels, wants to get out there, wants to do stuff. Why aren't we moving? And you're there trying to recuperate from this life-saving surgery with a teenager running around going, come on, let's go. It just doesn't work at the moment, right?
Right. Okay.
So the de-sexing thing, you might see a reduction in activity, but I think you're going to – that's kind of more – a few years down the track.
Right.
Certainly for this age group. And de-sexing, it just doesn't switch off their activity level that quickly.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So there is definitely an age factor. Now, I'd like to be able to say, look, when they're 12 months old, everything's going to settle down. I've got dogs that are now 20 months, and we thought they'd settle down. Well, I've got two, so this is why I can speak on this with some experience.
Seriously.
Yes, and Cheryl's laughing because she told me not to get two female dogs of the same age from the same litter.
Right.
And I'm going through all the hassles of having these two dogs. But we originally thought, oh, they'll settle down when they're 12 months. Well, now we're saying, oh, they'll settle down when they're 2 years. I just don't think we have a hard timeline on these sort of things.
Right. Okay.
And a Jack Russell dog, they're a very active, energetic little dog.
Absolutely.
You know, that's great when you're firing on all full cylinders, that's fine.
Yeah.
But at the moment, it's just not working. And to me, that also gives you a little bit of a guide as to how you could approach this. Because there's a temporary or this recovery period before you can really get your activity levels up, and I know that, you know, your doctors and physios and everything, they'll want to keep you moving early, but you do have to – you know, not move at Jack Russell Terrier pace.
Yes.
And so you've got to go on your own speed. They'll go on their speed. But what else can happen? And you mentioned about toys. That's great. But it is a bit more of that interaction. And I think you want to look at that from a temporary point of view rather than bringing another dog into the mix.
Right.
Because apart from, now he's got someone to play with. Well, now he's got someone to fight with. Now he's got someone to... you know, destroy the house with. Now he's got someone who you may or may not be trained to a level that suits you, and you're not in a position to be able to do a lot of work
not at the moment. Not possible next 6 to 8 weeks, no, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
My thoughts are there are dog groups that can help out and, you know, they get out and get active and it's also good for yourself in terms of walking and so on. Right. So certainly you've got to be guided by your own medical scenario.
Mm-hmm.
But I would be trying to connect with other people who've got dogs that maybe your little dog gets along with and
yes.
see if they can spend time together. I'm not saying he goes and lives anywhere.
Yes,
but,
yes.
you know, for my situation, as I said, we've got the two little dogs and I think they're getting about 2 to 2.5 hours exercise a day.
Right, okay.
So,
okay.
you know, and even then I'm like, okay, hopefully they'll sleep now.
Yes.
but I think I'd be looking for a bit more support on a temporary basis rather than trying to complicate things for you.
Sure. Okay. So, say down the track, like I do have also an 18-year-old wide-haired fox cross terrier.
Right.
And he would run himself to the rags.
Yeah.
Play with the ball, but unfortunately, he's 18. Monty's 10 months.
Yes.
Max is a beautiful dog. He never barks at him. He never bites at him. He never snaps at him. And I'm thinking, God, he's got a temperament, absolute beautiful temperament. But, you know, Max is at the...
Yeah, you may not be able to repeat that. That's one of the things. So
that's the other thing.
I would look around for some support. You know, there's plenty of groups on some of the social media apps, the group neighbourhood apps, where people will help out with that sort of thing. We walk our dogs and meet up with some wonderful people with their dogs and they run around crazy and then they go back on the lead and, you know, they're under control and they sleep, hopefully, fingers crossed. So try and look for some temporary support. I think that's going to be better. I don't want to land you in a problem with another dog.
Yeah. Good luck with that, Rodney. And we've got Peter from Turalba on the line. Peter, you've got an issue with your poodle, 12-year-old poodle.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. We've got a little fella. He's a great little dog, but he's been diagnosed with diabetes about 6 months ago, and he's really starting to go downhill. He's losing weight. We inject him twice daily with insulin. We've upped the dosage. He's going blind. We just don't know what to do. We've taken him to the vet to measure his insulin sugar levels. They have the disc on him. We had a couple of goes at that, and then we sort of roughly worked out what he needed. And then, but being 12, we just don't know what to do. Like, we don't really want to part with him, like he's our little mate, but we don't want to be cruel to him either. He's lethargic. He drinks an awful lot of water.
Right? Yeah. Are you doing any urine testing, Peter?
No, we haven't. He's becoming incontinent too. Like.
Yeah, yeah, sure. And when was the last time you were at the vet with him?
Again, about 6 months ago. When he was diagnosed.
Oh, okay. So what happens is that whenever we see dogs that are – and diabetes is one of these conditions, just to give a bit of background for everyone. So it's either a relative or absolute deficiency of insulin. And usually in dogs we're talking about an absolute deficiency. So the pancreas, which is the organ that produces insulin, it's stimulated by glucose entering the gut and then it produces insulin. And insulin acts as a sort of a key to open up cells to get glucose to go from the bloodstream into the cells. And it's the main energy substrate that's used by the body. So if we don't have any insulin, then we can't open the cells. And so the blood starts to retain and the glucose builds up and up and up. The other thing is the body then says, well, we're running out of energy. So what we're going to do is we don't have any glucose, even though you can measure the blood and it's heaps of it. And so the body starts to burn fats and that leads to problems as well. So when we see dogs that are, and we've had them on some treatment, we really want to be following up to see, is this the right insulin? And I'll touch on that a little bit more in a second. And or has something else changed? Because certainly they could be a dog that had, you know, maybe they were 90% deficient in insulin production in their body and now they're 100% deficient, okay? So there's a whole lot of other processes that go on with the interaction with glucose and pancreatic cells, but they can actually get worse even after that diagnosis, just on that simple how much insulin do they produce themselves. But the other concern is that you can find the metabolism of insulin in the body starts to change. So you're injecting insulin, and there are, I mentioned there are different types. So the different types affect how quickly or they're absorbed, how they're metabolized, and that means how much is made available to control the glucose in the blood. So if we're not quite on the right insulin, or maybe, as I said, that could have changed, then it might be that an actual change of insulin is required. So it's really important that you go back to your vet, like today, and speak to them about what's going on. They'll probably want to get a urine sample. They'll probably, well, they'll certainly want to do a blood sample to check his glucose level when you come in. They'll want some details about his drinking, about his diet, because those things, it may be, and I understand, as you said, 12-year-old dog, you know, this is a serious disease and it's going downhill. But it may just be that we've got to tinker with the dose or we've got to adjust the insulin just to get it right. And I find this takes a little bit of time. It's not just a set and forget. So it's best to go back and speak to your vet today, because otherwise I'm worried that if you don't do that today, you could end up in the emergency hospital tonight with serious problems. So I think...
What sort of life expectancy do they have once they've been diagnosed with this condition?
Look, it depends on some of those underlying conditions. Some dogs, and particularly if you're 12, have multiple conditions. You know, it's not just diabetes. Mm. So if it's just diabetes, then it can be, and it's controlled, then it can, they can keep going for years. I've seen dogs on insulin treatments for 5, 6, 8 years easily.
But he's blind. His eyesight has rapidly deteriorated. To the point where he can't even see his ball in front of him. He still wants to play, but he's got no idea where the ball is.
Yeah, so there are things you can do there, like as far as just to help him engage with his environment is to make sure you don't move furniture around, get him a ball that actually has a rattle or a noise inside it, because he'll start to engage with that. There's a whole heap of other problems. Like when you tell me that he wasn't blind and now he is, that means he's developed cataracts, most likely.
White.
Yeah. And that's related to levels of glucose in his blood being too high. So I think he's been going along for a while without having the insulin at the correct level to control that. So, but look, if there are things that come up when you speak with your vet that said, we're not getting control here and there's a few things we could try, maybe they will, maybe they won't. You're best to have that conversation because it may just be, look, let's adjust the dose here or change the insulin and things come back to good. It's not going to fix his eyesight, but at least he'll be back running around eating and drinking normally instead of the condition that you're in at the moment.
All the best with that, Peter. Cheryl, you've got a Jack Russell. It's been de-sexed. It's a female, 3 years old, and it's licking her. She's licking her paws.
Yes, that's right. A year ago or something, she started that, and I had her to the vet and medication in case she had a fungal infection. But she has continued to do this. And I did also hear that sometimes they do that just because it feels good and it's a security thing and all that sort of thing. So I was just wondering if that could be so, or should I have it checked again for infections, or what's the take on that?
Yeah, thanks, Cheryl. Well, look, I would probably want to, rather than just whether it feels good, I think maybe some dogs do experience that, but I think they start licking their feet for a different reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more likely that over time, I think it's actually annoying them and it's mm-hmm. painful or itchy all the time and things like that. So if we go back to that point, then the question is, well, why would she start licking her paws and subsequently continue? Then I'm worried because she is in an age group where we're worried about things like contact allergy, dermatitis.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's on a pause that she might be having contact and the most likely thing is some grass.
Okay.
Yep. So she could have developed some allergy to grass or different types of grasses. And it's pretty hard to nail down what those are and, you know, whether not saying you have to go and change the yard and things like that. But you mentioned about medication. So she had antifungal medication. Was that just a shampoo that you were using?
No, I think it was a tablet, actually. It's going back a while.
Yeah,
just in case she, you know, because the vet said, well, you know, it's probably a fungal thing. And I had also heard, like, as I said, that it could then carry on to be a soothing, nice thing for them to do. So I'm pretty sure it was
just not some a tablet. Cream, yeah,
it was just a tablet.
So I would want to probably do you bath her at the moment frequently or regularly?
I very rarely have bathed because she's already always been a dog that's been near water, like salt water. But I mean, that was since she was a puppy. So, but she's now 3.5. So, I can't remember. And after being in the salt, I not so much now, but would just give her a lukewarm bath with nothing in it.
Sure. Yeah. And do you have any other dogs?
No.
Okay. So first thing, I'm going to suggest that we start washing her regularly, and I would use an allergy, the best one I know is an aloe vera based shampoo.
Mm-hmm.
If her paws are smelly, like they smell moldy or musty, things like that, then certainly we could probably use an antifungal shampoo. Now you can buy these off the shelf, right? So Maliseb is the antifungal one that we tend to use, and Allevine is probably the most commonly used aloe vera based / anti-allergy shampoo. Okay. Now you need to be doing that for her, I'm going to say weekly.
Sure.
But I also want you to wipe her feet down with a damp cloth every day.
Right.
And sometimes more than once per day. Anytime she goes out onto the grass or she's out on the grass, you need to wipe her feet. Because if she's getting
water or just like a cloth with water or that.
Yeah. You can just use like a flannel cloth or say an old, like a Chucks type thing.
Yeah.
Use that, wiping her feet. Because if it is an allergy, then the proteins in the allergen are sitting on the skin. The longer they sit there, the more likely they are to cause problems. And at least you can remove some of them. You know, we don't rely upon wiping their feet just to control the whole thing, but you want to remove at least some of them. And then the shampoo actually helps to soothe the skin and reduce the level of inflammation overall. So if the feet smell musty, use the Maliseb. And if they're just red or they're itchy and she's licking them without that smell, then I would use aloe vera or Allevine shampoo and then wiping the feet. And if you do that for about the next couple of weeks and then go to the vet if it's still happening. So
all the best with that, Cheryl. Next on the line, we have Steve from Raymond Terrace with a puppy problem.
G'day, Steve.
Yeah, hi. Look, it's more a behavioural thing. We've only had the pup for about a few weeks, about 18 weeks old. It's like a Cavalier cross Jack Russell, but beautiful pup. But she comes at the door of our bedroom at 6:30 every morning around about the same time, 20 past 6.
Yeah.
Just wondering, is there a solution? We leave the garage door leading into the house so she can do a wee. But it's about nearly every day at 20 past 6, she scratches at the door.
How long have you had this little one for?
Probably about 8 weeks.
Okay. So generally when we talk to people with puppies and we want to improve or help their house training and things like that, we say first thing in the morning, last thing at night, and after every meal they go out onto the grass, go to the toilet.
Yep.
6:20, 6:30, that's every morning.
Every morning.
So she, that means I want to go out or I want to go do something. I'm up. Why aren't you up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
we do have one of those trays with the artificial grass. She's really good toileting.
Yeah.
But she's got every access to able to do that. But just every morning about 20 past 6, she scratches at the door.
That's your alarm clock. That's what's happening. As far as she's concerned, look, there's some sunlight happening somewhere. I know the sun isn't actually up until about 5 to 7, but as far as she's concerned, there's some early light. Let's go. The day started. Time to get up. So, look, you've got a couple of choices, but to me, the standard thing I would say is you just need to separate some space between her and the door. Like, is there a way to separate her away from coming up to the bedroom door?
We could use a bit of a, like a timber leading out into the garage sometimes. But, and we've got plantation shutters, and I've even, you know, suggested closing the plantation shutters up so she doesn't get that sunlight coming in or whatever time. Yeah. But she's just like an alarm clock. And, and she scratches and then she whinges, she whines, you know, like the old puppy whine.
Yeah, she's ready for some company.
Oh, that's what's happening. Mm. She's going by the sunlight, not by the clock.
Yep.
Okay, so you're either getting up with her and starting the day, or you need to do, as you said, maybe shut the shutters so she's not getting that daylight. She'll probably still keep at it, and obviously the days are getting a bit longer now. So you might find that is going to get locked in, that type of behaviour. But I would try and separate her away from the bedroom and the hallway. Obviously, without knowing your layout of your house, if you can separate her away and she's not getting any kind of response from you, then she might start to drop that behaviour at that time.
Pet chat. And we have got Brian from Clarencetown on the line. Brian, you've got a parrot issue.
Yes, we've got a superb parrot who's, I'd say, about 19 years old, and just over the last few days, he's very quiet, doesn't do anything, not his usual chatty self. And I've put his clean food every day and put his snow peas in there, which he loves, but he hasn't touched those.
Mm. Mm. Now, Brian, do you have any other birds?
No.
Okay. Is he molting?
No.
So I haven't seen feathers coming through, new feathers coming through. Because that would be, any time we see a change in behaviour like that, change off their food or not making any sounds or change of vocalising either more or less, then I'm going to think the stress of molting can actually cause those sort of changes. And I'd certainly be on the lookout for anything that suggests that it could be molting. The problem with birds and these kind of like the parrots, the pet parrots, you know, so on, is that, and you've had this bird for a long time, so you'd be aware, like they're very good at, and not by intent, it's more a survival thing, but they're actually very good at hiding their symptoms.
Right.
Okay. Yep. So birds physiologically, it's built into them, it's physiological. They have this ability to tolerate often quite severe stress in their body, disease, things like that, for a long period of time before they even start to look sick.
Right.
And so anytime you see your bird that is changed, and unless you can exactly describe, yes, she's lost 3 feathers and there's more young ones coming through, et cetera, then any change that you're seeing, I would be getting off to the vet ASAP.
Right, okay. Now, a good avian vet who would, around our area, who would you suggest? Anybody?
Well, I can't nominate anyone in particular, and obviously we're going out over a broader area, but there are certainly a number of veterinary clinics. I'm not sure about up your way, but there are a number of veterinary clinics in Newcastle that have a history and the experience and qualifications working with birds on a much more regular basis. So usually if either in a Facebook group or just looking at people's website, you'll get a sense of that. But I'm not sure around Clarencetown. I haven't looked at the vets up there recently.
Might have to go to Dr. Google.
Well, just to find...
to find a vet.
Yeah, I do actually. I know 2 clinics that would be quite helpful, but I'm sure you'll be able to find your way to them. But I'd certainly get to them as soon as possible, because I spent a lot of years working in bird practice, and as soon as someone said that, I'd be like, right, let's check things out, because I don't want them to get worse.
No, that's right. That's right. Well, good luck with that, Brian. Hopefully everything works out. This is Pet Chat on 2NURFM, and we are almost out of time. We've got a couple of minutes left. Just want to announce our winner for the Dozer & Co. Katara voucher, and it is Rodney from Charlestown. So somebody will get in touch with you. Congratulations, Rodney. Now, if you haven't seen our Pet of the Week, you can go to our website at 2NURFM.com.au. We've got Goethe, the cat. She's a two-year-old ginger and black cat with a beautiful white chest and paws who is looking for her forever home. And we've also got, let me just scroll.
Duke. Yeah.
What sort of dog is that? A cavoodle, one-year-old cavoodle.
So. His legs are a bit long, I think, for a cavoodle, but maybe the scale's a bit off. But he looks chill, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
He looks very.
So if you like a dog on your furniture, Duke's the dog for you.
He is very cute though. So yeah, have a look. Go to our website, 2NURFM.com.au. Now, we've got about 50 seconds left, so is there anything that you'd like to get off your chest before we go?
I love doing Pet Chat, and you guys reminded me when I came in that I haven't been here very much this year.
You
and
haven't.
It's because we've got a great team with Dr. Kimberly and Dr. Fiona. So I think it's really fantastic to come back. But this was my third visit this year, and I did have a topic, but we'll have to leave it for another time.
Oh,
yeah, lots of callers. It's fabulous to have callers.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
It is. People ringing in.
So you'll have to save that. What's the topic?
Well, there is very quickly. There's an intravenous fluid shortage worldwide. So when we treat pets, we're struggling to get intravenous fluids into our vet hospitals. Also, they are actually short in human hospitals, but their government has prioritised that those fluid supplies get diverted to human hospitals. So, yeah. But we can update it. Hopefully we've got better news in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, we'll talk about it soon.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Amanda.
2NURFM.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. Topics range from gardening to health, well-being, pet care and travel. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.